This is an iHeart podcast.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, wonderful Wednesday. All kinds of stuff. We're going to talk more about government corruption here in just a moment. That'll be spicy and fun. We'll make fun of the GOP. That's always a good time. And we're about to get so smart. In about a half hour. About a half hour from now, Brandon Weikert's going to come on, and let me explain why I'm bringing him on. If you've listened for a while, you know Brandon Weikert does foreign policy stuff. Donald Trump, in this foreign trip he's on with Saudi Arabia and Qatar and places like that, he's giving these speeches, and he's saying a lot of things, and they are significant internationally. In fact, I'm thinking about an hour from now doing a little talk about America and our foreign policy and things like that. But Donald Trump is very, very clearly realigning or attempting to realign how America is globally, how we conduct ourselves globally, how involved we are globally. And there's a lot to tackle. So Brandon Weikert's going to give us a heads up on what all is happening with Iran and Turkey and Syria and Israel and Qatar and Saudi Arabia and all these places. We're going to discuss all that about a half hour from now. We will be so smart. We'll rub it in all of our friends' faces tomorrow about how smart we are. So just get ready for that. Now, I want to get to this. Alana Goodman, she's a wonderful reporter at the Free Beacon. She has a story out about somebody we've talked about before on this show. His name is Jigar Shah. Jigar Shah. And you see, he had a role. Joe Biden made him the energy, what did they call him? The energy loan czar. The energy loan czar. What does that actually mean? He was the director of the Department of Energy's loan programs office. And it doesn't exactly take a genius to figure out what that means. He's the guy who hands out a million here, a million there. And let's be honest, it wasn't a million here, a million there. It was a billion here, a billion there. Hey, who wants a billion? You want a billion? And you're not dumb. You know who he was giving that money to. Remember why communists, what communists do with power? What two things do communists do with power? Anyone who's listened to the show knows. What are the two things they do with power? Reward their friends. Punish their enemies. Communists believe in using power for two reasons. Reward your friends, punish your enemies. This guy got in there and he started grabbing as much of your money as humanly possible and throwing it at all these ridiculous green energy scams that are out there, which makes it so nakedly corrupt, because where do all these, quote, green energy, I shouldn't even use that word, the climate scam energy companies, where do they donate their money when they donate political donations? Roughly 1,000% of their political donations go to the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party gets elected, and they do what communists always do. They take your money, the taxpayer money, and they hand it right back to the climate commie companies, who then in turn donate again to the... You understand the vicious little ugly circle of corruption we have here. Well, he's no longer at his current position. Now he's over there in Europe trying to do the same thing to the Europeans. I wanted to combine that with something Sean Duffy said today. Remember, Sean Duffy is the transportation secretary. I've met Sean a couple times. Wonderful human being. Just wonderful family, actually. Sean's a great guy. A really great guy. And Sean said something about the trillions with a T that seemed to have disappeared. Here's what he said.
In 2010, they passed the stimulus bill under the Obama era. And then you had $1.2 trillion in the last Congress. And so that's $2 trillion over 10 years. And sometimes you look around the country and go, where did $2 trillion go? Where is all the infrastructure? Why don't we have more? And I think it does, a lot of this money gets eaten up in the permitting and in the consultants. And I want to see more of the money go, you know, to.
The money was stolen. And let me clarify. Just because you steal something legally, don't think that buys you any benefit from me on thievery. Because you know how this works, as we've discussed many times before. Congress, Democrats pass some big corrupt bill, the Inflation Reduction Act. And in that bill, it's $1 trillion with money for this and money for that. And so we'll save $500 million for solar panels. It was more. We'll just call it $500 million for solar panels. But that, of course, goes to a government department to hand out $500 million. And they'll look for qualified, approved contractors who get that $500 million. In fact, the government department may even seek out some sort of a D.C. area consultant. Hey, we have $500 million that need to go to solar panel companies. We definitely need a separate company to help us figure out where to send that $500 million. And what? Wouldn't you know it? My second cousin has a consulting company. That's right, Chris. I know a guy. I just happen to know a guy. And for a small fee of $100 million, he will tell us where to send the $500 million. And once you get the money to the second cousin and he takes his $100 million off the top, then he goes through and looks for his second cousin and his uncle and his campaign donors, and he hands them your taxpayer money. And yes, on the surface, a lot of this stuff, I want to be clear, is perfectly legal by the letter of the law. But don't think for a second it's anything better than outright theft. You have been robbed repeatedly by Washington, D.C. Remember Elon Musk? Elon Musk did something. It might have been on Joe Rogan. I'm not sure where it was. But he talked recently about what he was discovering at Doge and how the money works and how essentially 90 cents of every dollar, even the foreign aid stuff, You might think that money goes overseas. No. 90 cents of every dollar stays right in Washington, D.C. Remember that story? We touched on it a little bit about the African Development Office or something stupid like that. And it doesn't take a genius to figure out the job of that office is to help Africa, of course, with your money, which you never agreed to. But we need to help Africa, except all the money just stayed here. And the money that did go to Africa, most of it came right back here. That's how it worked. Now, that actually was a crime. In fact, the guy's, I believe, already been indicted or being indicted. I know he's being investigated, but this is how Washington corruption works. And this brings me to this little story here. Insider trading is something we've discussed before. Insider trading as far as Congress goes. Congress, sadly, has a lot of control over our economy. They have a lot of sway over our economy. Things they do, things they don't do. It makes certain sectors of our economy go up, certain sectors go down. And these people, they know before we know. You're not in these committee meetings. They know before we know. And they trade stocks to make money or avoid losing money before you get the opportunity, before I get the opportunity. That's a violation of the law. If I have inside knowledge, let's say I'm a big stockholder in Nike. I'm not, but let's say I'm a big stockholder in Nike. And maybe my brother feeds me some information that, hey, Jesse, I work for Nike. And let me tell you what, they've got a new shoe coming out. Stock's about to blow up. And let's say I sell a bunch of stock or buy a bunch of stock because my brother who works for Nike told me that. I'm going to prison. Did you know that? That's illegal. Yet Congress does this all the time. There's a reason members of Congress routinely beat the greatest financial consultants in the country. It's because they're insider trading. Mike Johnson, this is hilarious. He came out and he said that he backs a bipartisan push on banning congressional stock trading, but he stopped short of promising a vote on it. Gosh, that might be the most Republican statement in the history of Republican statements. We should definitely ban this. And I might have a vote on it. I mean, probably not, but maybe we'll vote on it one day. Maybe after the election, we'll have a vote on it. That might be the most GOP thing in the world. These people are all thieves and scumbags. And this is why people get angry about politics. And it's also why I call it the low-T GOP. It's not just because Mike Johnson and the rest of the Republican Party have lower T levels than the average American male. That can be fixed with chalk. It's because these people never had the guts to actually stand up to D.C. corruption. In fact, Tim Burchett said something about D.C. corruption in Congress. Before we get to Tim Burchett, let me tell you about chalk, by the way. Are you taking your male vitality stack? Are you taking your female vitality stack? Are you full of energy and pep? Do you feel good all the time, or do you feel like garbage all the time? Chalk will make you feel good, because it's natural herbal supplements. And when I say feel good, I don't mean just, I don't know, your body. Your mind works better. Your focus is better. Your energy is better. Your mood is better when you get the things inside of you you need inside of you. Chalk will do it. You want your T levels up, gentlemen? Go take a male vitality stack for 90 days. Tell me how you feel. CHOQ.com, promo code Jesse. Chalk.com, promo code Jesse. We'll be back.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. I am excited because Brandon Weikert is coming up about 10 minutes from now, and you are about to be so much smarter than you already are. I am too. Chris, not so much, but we can only do what we can do. That is going to be fascinating. Tim Burchett, who I love, Tennessee's own Tim Burchett, he was talking about Congress and Trump's executive orders, and here's what he said.
Hey, everybody. Congressman Tim Burchett. I'm incredibly frustrated this morning. I fear that we will seriously lose our country. We have got to start codifying these executive orders from President Trump. America realizes what's going on. Congress needs to wake up, and dadgummit, we've got to do our job.
What has happened in D.C., what is happening in D.C. is the American people are completely fed up with the corruption. They're fed up with the way Congress has done things. And as per usual, DC's the last to know. And now that they're starting to pick up on the fact that people really want genuine change, like banning of stock trading, as we were just talking about, people want these changes. They want these changes. What Congress is now going to try to do is something they've been trying to do for some years now. They're trying to wait out Trump, because they think the source of all these change calls is Donald Trump. They have no earthly idea what they're dealing with. Donald Trump is there because the American people were ready for a change. And after Donald Trump is gone, that same desire will be there. If not, it'll burn even hotter. If anything, it'll burn even hotter than it already is now. But what the House wants to do, and the Senate, the Republicans and Democrats in the House, the Republicans and Democrats in the Senate, what they want to do is pretend as if they're on board with you and the things you want. Pretend they're on board with things like banning stock trading. But then when it actually comes right down to it, it's, well, I mean, we'll try to schedule a vote. I'm not really sure. I don't know. My dog's sick. I can't get to it. I know. When somebody is trying to wait me out, I know it. I have a son who doesn't eat his vegetables. And Ob and I, a couple times, we tried when he was younger, we tried the tactic of making him sit at the dinner table until the vegetables were eaten. He waited us out. He would sit there, talk, laugh, make jokes, slip the dog as much food as he could possibly slip the dog, and just sit there and wait. That adorable look on his face. That's exactly what Congress is trying to do to us in a much less adorable way. Congress is attempting to wait out the America First movement. They are. The GOP does not want to codify anything into law because they don't want to actually do any of these things. In fact, they want to do the opposite of all these things. So they understand they can't say that. What they're hoping is, I bet you they wake up every day. I bet you they have reminders in their calendar for the day Donald Trump is finally done as president. And I bet they have deluded themselves into believing on that day, everything can just finally go back to normal. We can finally go back to doing things the way we've always done things. But I'm here to tell each and every person who thinks that in Congress, you really don't understand what is happening in this country. You don't understand it at all. You've spent too much time around lobbyists and other scumbag politicians. You've spent too much time in Washington, D.C. The American people's anger at how things are done in this country is palpable. And it's getting worse and worse and worse. And stuff like this I played, it only pours gas on the fire.
2010, they passed the stimulus bill under the Obama era. And then you had $1.2 trillion in the last Congress. And so that's $2 trillion over 10 years. And sometimes you look around the country and go, where did $2 trillion go? Where is all the infrastructure? Why don't we have more? And I think it does. A lot of this money gets eaten up in.
The American people are sick of it. And COVID actually helped move this along as well. The American people quickly grew tired of the do as I say, not as I do politicians in this country. The politicians both in Congress. Remember when they left the congressional gym open? These morons. American gyms closed across the country because of a chest cold, which is hilarious. But they closed gyms across the country. People were mad about it. And then the story came out that Congress has a big weight room. Congress left their gym open. And they were just completely oblivious to it. I remember one guy was asked about it. And it's like, well, yeah, we got to work out. Just totally out of touch, and they do not understand the level of anger that is out there. I mean, I brought up that story about that illegal to start out the show. They don't understand the level of anger Americans have at illegals committing crimes in this country. That hasn't even gone in. Even most Republicans don't really fully understand how bad that anger is. It's really, really bad. You people in D.C. suffer from the worst case of signal lag I've ever seen. Mike Johnson says we'll try to get a vote on banning insider trading if we get to it. That's essentially what he said. Well, kind of. I don't know. Maybe we'll vote on it. And you guys better wake up. This is why I tell you a dictator is coming. You're going to keep ignoring the people and ignoring the people, trying to wait out Trump and wait out this and hoping this will pass. It's not going to pass. I'm telling you right now, it's going to be bad. Now, speaking of all the crime, what do you do when one of the two major political parties wants more of it? Gosh, what do you do? Well, you better get something to protect yourself. Man, especially if you live in one of these blue areas, they are pro-criminal and anti-you. What are you going to do? Do you have a Byrna yet? You know they have a new compact launcher? It fires at 400 feet per second. It's non-lethal. But Jesse, I can't own that. I'm in Colorado. I can't own that. I'm in California. No. Byrna's legal everywhere. All 50 states. You don't need a permit. You don't need a background check. SWAT teams carry them. Private security companies carry them. Over 500 government agencies carry them. These things are legit. It'll save your friggin' life, man. It'll put a stop to a bad guy quickly. Little tear gas rounds. Oh, you can't even imagine the powder that comes. It's brutal. Give one to your daughter you sent away to college, please. Your mom, your dad. BYRNA, Byrna.com/Jesse gets you a discount, all right? Byrna.com/Jesse. Brandon Weikert educates us on international things. Next.
He doesn't care if you believe him, but he's right. Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, wonderful Wednesday. Remember, you can email the show, Jesse at jessekellyshow.com. It's very rare for us to have one guest on the show, let alone two, but it just felt right today because I need to know what the heck is going on overseas. Trump is in Saudi Arabia. Now he's in Qatar. I know the experts call it Qatar, but I went to community college. Either way, I bet Brandon Weikert knows what's going on. He wrote the book, The Shadow War, about Iran, those dirt balls. Brandon, what's going on with Trump and Iran? And I've heard, especially in that speech he gave yesterday, a lot of what we'd call saber-rattling talk. What's happening?
Well, thanks for having me. And we are moving at the speed of Trump. It's almost hard for me to keep up, and I do this for a living, the way this guy is moving through the region. I will just say that his speech yesterday was probably the best speech of either of his terms so far in office. It certainly set the table for, I think, how America is going to proceed, not just during the Trump years, but probably beyond as well with the Middle East. We are clearly no longer going to prioritize the region the way that we were doing after 9/11. That's both good and bad. The good thing is we're not going to be sending any more kids to go fight and die in those Middle East wars. Now, the downside here, though, is it looks like he's handing the region over at least to some bad actors, not all, but some, like the Muslim Brotherhood in Qatar. So there are some real concerns, and it isn't just from not never Trump types. There are some real concerns from people on our side, and I think their concerns are justified that maybe Trump is getting too cozy with the Qataris, for instance, who are a huge funder of the Islamic terrorism that we've been dealing with since 9/11.
Okay, so let's actually nail down on that. It's one of the main reasons I wanted you to come on, because you're the furthest thing in the world from a never-Trumper. So this is kind of how I look at it. I'm concerned myself. However, is there a way for us to wash our hands of this region and let them do what they do without handing it to some bad actors? Because bad actors run a lot of the dumps over there.
That's right. That's right. No, I think that's probably what's at play here, because like I said, they're not all bad actors. I mean, the Saudi government, at least under Mohammed bin Salman, he's very pro-American. Clearly, he has a very, very strong rapport with President Trump. That's the real, in the Arab world, at least, that's the real power. And so the fact that we've got a friendly in the crown prince, that's going to stabilize and sort of contain what Qatar might otherwise do now that Trump is sort of letting them in to the wider picture, the Qataris he's letting in. But the fact that we've got the crown prince, Saudi Arabia, that will balance that, because they don't want the Qataris to go full bore into the Muslim Brotherhood stuff either. The problem is, though, the Muslim Brotherhood itself, which is the umbrella organization for Islamism, that is the ideology that we've been fighting. That's the ideology of bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, the ideology of ISIS, the ideology of Jilani in Syria, who, again, I'm very disturbed, Trump is recognizing. But ultimately, the Saudis are a great counterweight to that, which is why I say it's not all bad, but it is concerning. And I think, though, this is part of a larger move to pull the Americans out of the region and let the locals clean up their own messes. Now, the downside is going to be for our friends in Israel, because our friends in Israel have overplayed their hand, Netanyahu in particular. And what's happening now is Trump is fed up with Netanyahu. So he's basically letting the region isolate Israel as we exit out of the region. So that's going to be a continuing headache and a threat to the Israelis, especially because the Muslim Brotherhood has direct ties to the most powerful country in the region, and that is Turkey.
Okay, so there's so much to unpack there. Let's nail down on the Israel thing first. Why is Trump fed up with Israel and Netanyahu? Because it's honestly, it's difficult to get more pro-Israel than Trump has historically been. They call the Golan Heights the Trump Heights. I was there once, and they had billboards of the man up. What in the world did Netanyahu do to get crossways with Trump?
I think what Trump has been trying to do is avoid another Middle East war, and I think he feels, and I don't know if this is right or not, but I think he feels that Netanyahu is intransigent about picking a fight with Iran. And while Trump has certainly made it clear he doesn't want to see Iran become more powerful, He has also made it abundantly clear that he's not going to war against Iran anytime soon. And so Netanyahu, you know, Netanyahu is, Israel itself is threatened directly by Iran, the Iranian proxies, the Houthis, Hamas, Hezbollah, especially Hezbollah. Those Iranian proxies are direct threats to Israel, but the Israelis can't take it all on their own. So I think Trump is frustrated because Netanyahu is very gung-ho about knocking out the Iranian regime while he thinks there's still time to do that, or at least the nuclear facilities, but that will lead to a regime change mission, whereas Trump doesn't want to do that. And I think that Trump felt he no longer had a viable partner in Netanyahu. Now, what I think might happen is whenever the political system in Israel gets back on track, it's been sort of off kilter since the October 7th terror attacks. I think whenever that process comes back into play, where domestic politics in Israel starts normalizing, I think Netanyahu's probably not going to last much longer in office. And at that point, there might be a resetting of relations between Israel and the U.S. But I argue as long as Netanyahu is in office, Trump's going to let the kind of Islamic powers of the region isolate Israel so that it buys us time and favor to leave peacefully from the wider Middle East.
Did the Gaza stuff, the Gaza war, I shouldn't call it stuff, did the Gaza war that Israel's fighting, is that something that Trump likes, dislikes? And I ask because I remember, like it was yesterday, when he talked about putting up hotels and just making it a nice place.
The Riviera, the Riviera of the Middle East. You go ahead.
Go ahead, please.
I think that he wants peace in the region. I think initially he thought Netanyahu would be his ticket to quickly getting peace. You have to remember, though, the Israeli military is highly competent, but they're a small force. And so when they went in to Gaza, yes, they did a lot of damage to Hamas, and that's good. But unfortunately, there was a lot of collateral damage. And I think Trump is looking around going, this doesn't look good for me and America in the region to be so closely tethered to all of the destruction in Gaza. Now, look, I think Netanyahu was justified to protect himself, to protect his country. Collateral damage is part of war. But ultimately, from the American perspective, at least as Trump saw it, it wasn't conducive to what he was trying to do with the wider region. And the wider region is not just Israel, it's the Arabs, it's even Iran and Turkey. So he's got to balance what Israel needs with what America needs to do, which is to extricate itself from the region without completely surrendering the region to, say, Iran.
This stuff is all so complicated with allies here and enemies there. I need to, Chris, next time we book Brandon Weichert, I think we need to get him for like an hour or something like that. I'm not going to ask you for an hour, Brandon, but do you have maybe one more segment with me? Because I want to talk. I want to talk turkey. How about that, Chris? Chris, that was funny. It was a dad joke. Whatever. Anyway, we will be right back with Brandon Weichert talking turkey, Iran, Iraq. I'm curious. Are they anything anymore? All that and more coming up. Hang on.
Truth. Attitude. Jesse Kelly.
We are back with Brandon Weichert. Obviously, you know Brandon Weichert if you listen to this show. Highly recommend you pick up his book, Shadow War. Okay, so I first want to ask you about Turkey before we get to Iran and Iraq, because you mentioned to us before on this show that they are really the big dog in the region. So maybe you could let us know, what is Turkey, Brandon? Is it some Islamist state? Is it a secular state? Are they Shiite? Are they Sunni? What are they?
Definitely an Islamist state. They are predominantly Sunni ethnic Turks. It's a little bit different than the Saudi Arabia, you know, Qatar side, which are ethnic Arabs, but they're also Sunni Muslim. The thing with Turkey is, under the current regime of Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the president, he is an Islamist. He belongs to the Islamist party, and he has made it clear his intention to rebuild the lost Ottoman Empire that collapsed at the end of the First World War, that was for hundreds of years the dominant power in the Middle East. And he is on track to restore it's called the Neo-Ottoman Empire. He is on track to bring that into being. And I argue that Trump's moves right now, whether it means to or not, are going to allow for Turkey to take a much greater role in the Middle East as we step out. Now, that's somewhat of a good thing because technically Turkey's a NATO ally. At the same time, though, they're a very unpredictable and unstable and at times unfriendly ally. And furthermore, if you're sitting in Israel, the last thing you should be wanting is a Turkey coming in and restoring the Ottoman Empire, because that probably means the end of Israel. The Turks are going to try to crush Israel at some point, and they've got the military capabilities in the long term to do that. So what's happening now is a completely generational shift. It's going back to the way things were before World War I in the region, with Turkey as the dominant power. That's not a good thing, though, necessarily for our friends in Israel.
Okay, so they're going to fill the vacuum of power when we step out. Where does Iran fit in all this? Turkey, obviously we know how they fit with Israel, but Turkey, right. Iraq, but where is Iran as far as their military capability? Whose side are they on? Where are they in this?
Well, the Iranians, that's a great question. The Iranians are predominantly a Shiite Muslim power, ethnic Persians. So they're really kind of on the outside of the region in many respects. They are Muslim, so that they have a lot of weight in the region, but they're not the predominant Sunni power. They are the Shiite power. What that means is Iran has spent the last several decades desperately trying to make itself into the dominant regional power. That was playing out throughout the Iraq War in 2003. That was playing out afterward during the Arab Spring and all of that. Ultimately, I argue, it looks to me like the Iranians are on the back foot. They have lost their connectivity to Syria through Iraq. They've lost their connectivity to Hezbollah in Lebanon. They're very much isolated in their own part of the region. However, Iran itself is a very hardened target. They have very sophisticated air defenses. They have a very capable, for that region, military, which means that any strike by us or even Israel on Iran, it might not end very well for us because of how complex the Iranian defenses are. Moving beyond the defensive to the offensive, I argue Iran is at the weakest it has been in years. It cannot initiate the kinds of offensives it was doing in 2014, for instance, against ISIS, because it's lost Syria. It's losing parts of Iraq to Turkish-backed groups, the Sunni groups. So ultimately, what will happen, I think, is Turkey will become the dominant force in the region, and the Iranians will basically kind of have their own little enclave in Iran itself, not unlike historically where you had the Ottoman Empire leading the Sunni side, and then you had kind of an Iranian, you know, the Safavid, for instance, empire running the kind of the Iranian side of things, and that's kind of a balance of power between the two of them.
Yeah, I'm going to need a new Lawrence of Arabia at some point in time here soon.
Oh, what, where,
Chris?
Yes.
Don't roll your eyes. All right, Iraq. I spent a little bit of time in that dump. Where are they now?
So they are torn between a Shiite dominant population. They're majority Shiite, which means they are aligned with Iran. This is why I said Iran after Iraq war, after we got rid of Saddam. Iran basically was on the offensive because they were able to move in to Iraq. We basically got rid of Saddam and handed Iraq over to Iran, which was not what we wanted to do. But there's also the Sunni element in northern and western Iraq near the Syrian border. The Sunni triangle, maybe you're familiar with if you served in Iraq, that was a key area of operation. The Turks are actually moving in force there to support the Sunni side that previously was the home of Al-Qaeda in Iraq and ISIS. So you have shaping up in Iraq sort of this no man's land between Turkish-backed Sunni militants and the Shiite-backed Iranian militants of the south of Iraq. So Iraq doesn't really, in my opinion, exist per se as a functional country. It's sort of like a neutral zone between the Sunni and Shiite sides of the region.
Oh, good. Well, at least all that fighting was worth it. That makes me feel really wonderful.
Right.
Okay, so finally, I swear I'll let you go after this one. Thank you for giving us an education, Brandon.
Yeah.
Russia, China, and frankly, Europe. You say when we back away, Turkey fills that vacuum. Are these other significant powers on the planet not interested, not involved, not able to get involved? Where are they? Why are they not sticking their noses in all this?
No. Russia and China are very much involved through Iran. Once we back away, you'll have the Turks filling the void, but then also on the periphery, you'll have Russia and China having more influence via Iran. China buys 80% of Iran's natural gas and oil. Most of Saudi Arabia's oil is sold to Asia, Japan, but also China. So China is going to have a significant long-term presence in the region, regardless of what happens with these Trump deals. Second of all, Russia is a key military partner for many of these regimes, notably Iran, but they're also making bold moves right now in Libya, where Russian-backed militants are fighting Turkish-backed militants for control of Libya. So ultimately, those two powers will have a greater influence as we step back. The Europeans, they're sort of trying to get in, but ultimately the Europeans are not a real power anymore. And so they're going to be forced to just watch from the periphery, I think.
He is Brandon Weikert. I bet you're going to buy that book now, aren't you? The book is Shadow War. Brandon, come back and see us soon. Thank you so much. I appreciate you, brother. I'm so smart now. Don't roll your eyes, Chris. And it did give me an idea to talk about something. I wasn't going to go this direction in hour three, but let's talk about America's influence internationally and why it's going the way it's going. Before we talk about that, I want to talk to you about something more important, and that's your dog's food, which is not good. Dog food is bad. If you ate at McDonald's every single meal, how long would you live? Probably not as long as you'd live otherwise, right? Probably not very long. Well, that's what we give our dogs. And I'm not talking about you actually go to McDonald's for your dog like my dad used to do. I'm talking about the fact that dog food is empty calories. There's no nutrition in it, and our dogs die too early because of it. We have to go to the vet too often because of it, because our dogs have health problems they shouldn't have. So give your dog nutrition. Sprinkle Rough Greens on your dog's food so your dog can live longer. Naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black created it so his dogs can live longer. Now he gives it to us. Free Jumpstart trial bags at 833-33-MY-DOG or go to roughgreens.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
This is an iHeart podcast.